Hey, welcome to Night School, and I got a cat on my lap, and I'm sitting on a couch. First episode I've ever done from a couch, so if this changes the vibe, if this ruins everything, let me know. Let me know if you can just hear the couch. Yeah, he just sounds lazy. There's just something, the second he started sitting on that couch, his voice just got lazy. I'm on the edge of the couch, though. I'm not lounging back. I'm actually sitting on the edge of the couch cushion, which should be a phrase for losing your mind, going mad. He's on the edge of the couch. He's not on the edge of his seat. He's on the edge of the couch. Normally, I do these episodes hunched over in a desk chair, in an office chair, but now I'm on that edge of the couch tip. But today I'm going to be talking about Ouroboros. If you don't know, it's the world snake, the world serpent in Norse mythology, the snake biting its own tail. And in Norse mythology, it represents something else entirely. But the way I'm thinking about it is it's sort of a representation of humanity. And with the rate of change being what it is, I feel like we are swallowing our own tail more and more. And, you know, what I mean by rate of change, too, it's a combination of just technology being what it is, the evolution of technology, population increase, the level of interconnectedness with everyone in the world. It's all those things, you know, feeding into each other, and then they feed back out. It's a feedback loop, which a feedback loop is a great way to think of Ouroboros, too. I mean, you think he essentially is a feedback loop, a snake biting his own tail or swallowing his own tail. And we've reached this point, though, where we've swallowed so much of the tail that the way that I don't really know how to visualize exactly where we are at now. I just know that we've swallowed more of the tail than we previously had. And I think a good way to think of it is I think it might have been Terence McKenna who used this analogy. But when talking about the rate of change, he was saying it's like a basketball. And when you're dribbling a basketball and you let it go, the bounce is pretty consistent with how you were dribbling it, but as it gets closer and closer to the gym floor, it eventually reaches a point where it's just barely bouncing off the floor, and then it just stops. And that's sort of how change is. It's exponential. You know, you figure more changed in the last 10 years than the previous 20, and more changed in the last 20 years than the previous 40. And, you know, of course, this isn't an exact science or math. There's no way to actually quantify change in that way. I mean, even if you were to map out all of the technological advancements, all the changes, all of that, there's no way to actually quantify that. But I think you can see where things do start to happen much faster. And we also, you know, because I mean, as a species, one thing we like to do is we like to chew on the past while thinking about the future. And that's, you know, there's some good to that. It's good to think ahead, and it's fun to reminisce. It's fun to have a sense of nostalgia. And I know I did an episode about nostalgia, and I don't mean to retrace too many of my steps, but I know I will, because God forbid I repeat myself. I would never do that. I would never repeat myself on this show over and over again. But you think, you know, I'm a very nostalgic person. I'm sentimental, you know, on a personal level, but I'm nostalgic on a cultural level where, you know, when I was, say, a teenager, I was nostalgic for my childhood and my interests specifically. It's like I was even nostalgic for things that I didn't really experience. You know, I was very into the 1950s. You know, my friends and I, we were in the play Grease when our school did the production. We were all excited. We got to be greasers. One of my favorite movies and books, both, is The Outsiders. So I was always into that kind of greaser thing, even though I wasn't born until 30 years later. And the same goes for music, obviously, if you're familiar with the Every Night's a School Night, the main podcast. I play a lot of old music that I wasn't even alive for. I don't think anybody was alive. No, that music just comes from the dream void. The stuff that I play on Every Night's a School Night is just from the dream void. It's like music you hear in a dream. That's always so cool, by the way. Like in a dream, when you hear actual music that doesn't exist, like it's one thing that your brain can like place this random person you grew up with in an abandoned shopping mall with like somebody that, you know, you met once at a grocery store and that you're all like investigating something in the dream world. But it's amazing when your brain can actually like write and map out a real song that you can hear in the dream, and you wake up and you can still hear that song That's an incredible phenomena, but I'm not talking about dreams here. I won't go into the dream topic. What am I talking about? Just that sort of the nostalgia of, you know, just it's always been something that it's been a huge draw for me, even stuff I didn't experience, but then the stuff I did experience as well, where, you know, by the late 90s, I was feeling nostalgic for the late 80s and early 90s and all of that. And on a cultural level, we've always kind of chased our tail a little bit with that, where I think about when my sister was in high school and she and her friends kind of got into this 1970s look. Her male friends would wear leisure suits to school, not in an obnoxious way. That makes it sound really obnoxious, like just desperate for attention. But they did it in kind of a cool way. They were in bands. They were cool. At least, I mean, to my fifth grade mind, those people were really fucking cool. I mean, they were in fucking high school and they played guitar. But yeah, I remember like my sister and her friends, like the girls, they wore bell bottoms for a while in the 90s and just kind of had that general look, like not over the top, but it crept in. And there's always been that sort of 20-year cycle where I feel like 20 years later, you know, because the, you know, when something's too recent, it's like you distance yourself from it. It's like in the mid 90s, there was nothing more uncool than the 80s. And by 80s, I mean like mid 80s, the whole, not necessarily Madonna, but just that era of things. The stuff that became really cool a few years later, because that's how the cycle works, or at least worked, because that's what I was going to say, is I don't know that that cycle is still what it is. I think it actually increased. Like when I was talking about the rate of change, I think that cycle actually started, it's a good example of things being exponential, where, you know, it used to take longer for us to draw from past eras and make them cool again. It used to take maybe 20 years for something to be cool. It took until the 90s for the 70s to be cool again. But then, you know, by the time we got to the early 2000s, the rate of change was starting to speed up, and the 80s was already cool again. And then the early 90s was cool by even, you know, like the mid-2000s. And then we reached a point with the internet where you could basically access everything you ever wanted to access from your past. Whereas, say, in 1984, if not the book, I don't talk about that shit. We're living in 1984. That's one of the most fucking annoying things that people continually reference is, or we're living in an Orwellian future. Well, we're in this Orwellian future. Oh, that sounds, the way the president's talking just sounds so Orwellian. Doesn't it sound like, oh, it's like something out of 1984 double newspeak? That's just like the most, oh, man. it's so easy to see that in things. It's like every fucking government ever, forever, you could compare to 1984. But anyway, that was a side note. That was just Ouroboros spitting some venom. Some of that venom. Anyway, like with the internet and stuff and technology being what it was, we started to have access to much more of the past at once than we ever had before. Like I was going to say, if you were in the year 1984, you wouldn't necessarily come across things from your childhood, at least not that often. If you went to thrift stores, if you specifically went to places that, you know, like thrift stores, junk shops, things like that, you're going to be exposed to it. Maybe they're going to show reruns. But I feel like there weren't even as many, I mean, there weren't as many channels for one, but there definitely weren't as many of those rerun channels. I don't know when Nick at Night came around. I grew up on it, so it was around from the time I was very young. But I don't know when we started to have those channels that were specific designed around just showing reruns from shows from 20, 30 years ago. Maybe that was always a thing. I don't know. But yeah, you used to have to either actively seek out stuff from the past, or you used to have to, or you would just luckily come across it and it would be like, oh, I remember that toy. You know, hey, sis, you remember, remember that game? Remember that board game we used to play? You'd come across it randomly, or you'd come across a movie or a show, or you'd go to some like video store and they would have some movie that you saw once on TV when you were a kid and you completely forgot about it because it's not a very well-known movie. And you're just like, damn, that movie. that used to be a much more circumstantial thing, or something that you had to actively seek out. Like, maybe you were a collector of vintage toys, so you would expose yourself to that. And when the internet came around, it was almost right off the bat, it catered to that kind of thing. Like, the first thing I ever remember researching on this huge fucking laptop that our neighbors had was Star Wars action figures, like looking up vintage Star Wars figures and stuff like that. So I even used it for, you know, older stuff, you know, and that was what was great about the internet is at that point in time, and here I am being nostalgic about the internet. In this Orwellian future, the only thing you can be nostalgic about is the intranet. But yeah, the way I saw the early internet was, it was a great way to document the material world that we don't readily have access to. It was a way to be able to see things and experience things that you might not come across on a day-to-day basis. It wasn't a world unto itself. Yeah, people could communicate. There were always like ways for people to communicate within the internet. There was always ways for people to communicate within the internet. This is just a mockery. It's just a mockery. I am now Ouroboros swallowing his own tail. Screw humanity and whatever analogy I was originally trying to make. This is just me swallowing my own tail. But over time, you know, with the internet, it just became more and more, and everything was kind of shoved down your throat. And it wasn't just that you were able to reminisce and look at things and all of that. I mean, you could go through IMDb, you could go over eBay, you could literally, like, there are any number of ways that you could come across things that you previously would have only come across through circumstance. And you're also exposed to new ideas. So while I was saying earlier, we as humans, we like to chew on the past while thinking about the future, I think the internet is just the manifestation of that idea. Because chewing on the past, like looking up things from your youth, even things you didn't even know about, that's a crazy thing too, is when the internet became big, you could just dig into like weird avenues of the past that other people brought to the surface, that other people were documenting. And you even see that in underground music, where once blogs came around, it was like, here are all these obscure, independently issued cassettes that nobody else ever heard, and you can listen to them now, you know, and now they're on YouTube and this and that. So you're exposed to things that you had no idea existed from the past, as well as the present, of course. It's a great way to expose things from the present. But then with the future, the internet is also the surest way to find out about something new or something that's going to be coming down the line, even if it's not going to happen. Or even, you know, you'll see that, like, just speaking of IMDb, where it's like, you'll see like some movies in production and it says release date like 2021, or it's crazy shit like that. So it's like, these ideas are put in your head about the future just by using this thing as well. It's really just full circle every time period that you could, you know, and even probably time periods that don't exist. I don't know. That's what the internet truly gave us access to, is time periods that don't exist. But then things reached a point where it wasn't just accessing nostalgia and all that. It became almost a nostalgia mill. And I mean that in the same sense as a puppy mill, or a factory. A factory would be a polite one. A nostalgia factory. I like saying nostalgia mill. It's a nostalgia mill. But it really did become that, where you started to have entire websites who were just catering to that, and entire companies. It's like the number of companies that probably make ends meet by selling Super Mario t-shirts is incredible. You know, once again, I don't know if we can quantify that, but the amount of companies that cater specifically to like retro looking things and, you know, old school style, whatever. You think about like going to Spencer Gifts in the 90s. Yeah, you'd come across like a baseball tee with like Donkey Kong on it. You know, that's not new. There's always been that throwback stuff. And like I said, even as a kid, like I was into like any kind of 1950s thing. I was into all kinds of things like that. All kinds of things like the 1950s. All things 50s. But then the internet reached this point, though, where we were getting access to so much of that that it kind of completely killed the natural process of learning about the past and rediscovering things from your past. The idea of just randomly coming across something in a thrift store, or your sibling randomly bringing up some TV show you forgot about, basically became non-existent, because they could just like share it to your wall And South Park, I feel like, did a really dark parody of that sort of mindset, where they did that member berries thing a couple years ago, and I think it ended up tying into some like stupid election joke. I mean, they're normally very good, but that show is great. I mean, it's one of the best shows of all time, in my opinion. But I kind of lost interest with the whole political angle. But just the idea of the member berries themselves, where they're just like, "Remember Chewbacca?" You know, it's like they're bringing up the most obvious things, like, "Remember this like extremely well known iconic character from really popular movie that came out when you grew up," you know, stuff that like nobody ever forgot about. Like nobody ever forgot about Chewbacca. And I think on the show, maybe I'm just imagining this, but I feel like it started out where the berries were bringing up stuff that was relatively obscure, but then they started going into overdrive and were bringing up virtually everything, which is, if that did happen, I don't even know if this was intentional, but it's like that's a great example of the basketball dribbling closer and closer, or the snake swallowing more and more of its own tail, and just reaching that point where it's like the basketball has suddenly stopped, or the snake has completely swallowed its own tail. Or actually, a good way to use the snake thing is my friend Miles, who I always reference, and I just need to fucking record our phone conversations or something. We've talked about doing a podcast before, but of course, if I like mic'd the phone and didn't tell him, that'd be fucked up. And then if I actually told him I was recording, it would probably kill the conversation. Anyway, he asked me a few years ago to draw him a tattoo of an Ouroboros with the tail breaking out the back of its own head. So it's swallowing the tail, and the tail is breaking out the back of the snake's head. And he didn't explain it, and I mean, I just like that idea, and I feel like that's a good representation of the way he thinks, and the way I think, for that matter, not to like claim his tattoo, it was his idea, and I still haven't drawn it, if he even still wants it. But that might be a better way to think about the Ouroboros, where it's like we started out where we were always kind of catching our own tail. We were always kind of nibbling on the end, biting it, and then we started to swallow more and more of it, and now it just broke out the back of our head. And yeah, with the South Park member berries, it's like it becomes exponential, where they're bringing up everything under the sun that they could possibly bring up. And I found that really dark. I found it very dark because I could tell what they were riffing off of. And it's that, like, there's not going to be anything. You know, I don't know that they were saying this, but it's like, what are you going to mine when you've already covered all the bases? And that's kind of how I feel about where we're at culturally, is that we've already mined all the bases. And this isn't just an internet thing, because it's easy to say, oh, you know, like, yeah, if you dig through the internet, of course you'll cover all the bases. But with the nostalgia thing, there are even these shows, they've been doing them for quite a while, but they'd be like, remember like the 70s, remember the 80s, remember the 90s. And they even have them for the 2000s now. And, you know, of course, the year 2000 was 18 years ago. But even the rate at which those shows are going is becoming quicker and quicker. And we're becoming more and more nostalgic about things that just happened. Because I even see people talk that way. They'll be like, you know, they'll be nostalgic about something that was like 3 years ago. And I feel like that all fits in the mentality. Like when the rate of change increases and becomes exponential, the rate at which things seem distant becomes greater too. So something that happened 3 years ago does legitimately seem like it was longer ago, because so much has changed since then. So it's not that weird that we're nostalgic about something from 3 years ago in the same way that 10 years ago we would have been nostalgic about something that was 10 years ago. Because when the rate of change is that quick, it's really like your entire sense of time gets shifted. Because you're processing so many things that it's not like you're actually measuring things based on actual time. And once again, you know, this is very, very quantifiable. I've put this under a lot of scientific scrutiny. I've put this under several microscopes, and I've held several rulers against this theory. We've covered all these bases, and we've already kind of swallowed everything and vomited it back up over and over again. And one of the results is that I think that young people have a much better defined sense of aesthetics and what's cool and kind of how to do something. It's almost like there's an instruction manual for everything now. Because when I was growing up, I went through a pretty brief punk phase. Like in my mind, it went on for like 10 years, but it was really like less than a year. It was like ninth grade. I got into some punk and hardcore, like some early punk and hardcore. And ultimately that music, that sort of just everything wasn't for me. And I still like some of that stuff. Some of like the more, I don't know, Bad Brains, you know, I still think that stuff is excellent. But it just, that wasn't a genre, that wasn't a culture that I could, subculture that I could really continue to delve into. It just wasn't for me. I found other things that were similarly raw that spoke to me much more. But my point is that when I was growing up, and like if you wanted to get into punk, and this was even like I had the internet, I could order CDs online, I could listen to some MP3s, but still, you know, if you wanted to get into like punk, it was going to be an awkward, rough road. Like you were going to have like a Bouncing Souls patch on your jacket that you were embarrassed about a month later. You know, you were going to buy like a t-shirt by some band that you didn't even really like because it was the only punk band shirt you could find and you wanted to own a punk shirt. You know, it was that kind of thing. You fumbled awkwardly through things. Like you couldn't just find t-shirts online of any band you wanted. You couldn't even find the good albums of some bands. You know what I mean? Like you ended up buying some shitty EP by a band you wanted to get into, like a later era EP, because that was the only thing that like was at the dollar bin and their best records hadn't been reissued. So it was this awkward process of getting into things, and you were not cool, even though you wanted desperately to be cool. It was like so difficult. And then we've reached this point now where you know, everything is just it's laid out completely. Where I was at this, it was about 3 years ago, I think it was, 3 years ago, I was down at a bar that happened to be having a punk fest that I didn't know about, because God knows I wouldn't willingly go to a punk fest, but it was this punk fest, and I ended up taking a hit of acid there from a friend. Unfortunately, I left before things went horribly wrong, but before I took the acid, and I was just kind of, maybe I'd already taken the acid, I don't know, and I haven't done a lot of acid, you know, despite referencing Terrence McKenna and stuff. Like, I'm not some major quote-unquote psychonaut. Like, I've experimented with the stuff since I was a teenager, but over, as you know, in this era when I'm basically like all about like, hey man, like consciousness, like you ever think about this? In this era of my life, I've done surprisingly few psychedelics, but basically I took this hit of acid at this punk fest, and like fortunately things hadn't kicked in, but I was looking around and I was just amazed at how these 20-year-olds, because it wasn't just a bar, it was also they allowed like underage people to come hang out as one of those places. And these like 20-year-olds, they were all perfect. Every single person at this punk fest looked perfect. Fashion-wise, they all had the perfect band shirts. And I don't mean like perfect as in pristine. I just mean they looked cool. They all, and I don't even like that music. I don't like the bands they like. I don't like the bands they like. You ever, Orwellian, 1984? No, but I don't. Like, I don't have anything in common with that whole quote-unquote subculture, anything like that. But I know who bands are. I know what's cool. I know what aesthetics matter and, you know, what a good aesthetic is, all that, whatever. And these people were all just perfect. They were so fine-tuned, even though they were rugged, even though they had, like, patches, even though they were punk. They were perfectly tailored. Nobody had an embarrassing patch. Nobody had an embarrassing shirt. There was no random like pop punk fan there. Or if they were, cause even pop punk has like become, there's like cool pop punk now, I'm sure, or whatever. I don't even know, but I was just amazed. I was like, these people, like they got everything. Cause like you can get all that online. You can like, whether it's a bootleg or not, it's like you can get literally every cool thing you want on eBay. You can read about everything you ever wanted to read about on some blog or some other site, and you can hear every single album you ever wanted to hear on YouTube. Nothing is out of reach. So you can really just perfectly tailor yourself. And I'm not criticizing people for doing this, because I would have done the same thing if I was growing up now. And I did grow up in the age of the internet, so I don't really have room to speak. It's not like I was like some tape trader in the 1980s. I was born in 1985. And, you know, I remember trying to find certain things on Napster and them not being available. But that's exactly what I mean, where even though I did have access to like MP3s and the internet when I was getting into music like that, it still wasn't as readily available. And so you would kind of try to, you would just do your best. And then, but these kids, they were just so perfect. I was amazed at how perfect they were. And that's really true for any kind of nuanced interest that's out there. It doesn't matter what it is. You have the ability to be perfect with it. All of the stumbling blocks have been removed. They're out of your way. And so you can just instantly become the essence of whatever it is that you are vaguely interested in. And that's exactly what I mean by having all the bases covered, by the snake swallowing its own tail, by the basketball, you know, sitting still on the gym floor. And I don't know what's going to happen because I don't see that much creativity. And I feel like people are always saying that. There's always some generation of people who, you know, get into their 30s or older and they say they don't see the same level of creativity with the younger generations. But this doesn't just apply to kids today. I'm not just talking about kids today. I'm talking about like virtually everyone. I mean, we already know TV is on its way out. I mean, TV is absolutely on its way out. I was watching commercials during football yesterday and, you know, I was thinking about how there was the Roseanne show, and then because she's Roseanne, she said something that pissed people off, and that's the crazy thing. This is exactly what I'm talking about, is they brought Roseanne's show back. It was extremely popular because people have that craving for nostalgia, especially people who still watch TV. Like, if you still watch regular old TV, you are the target audience for that forced nostalgia, for that nostalgia mill. But so Roseanne's show came back and it catered to that, you know, even if they had new ideas and it was a new show, it was still, you're watching fucking a new Roseanne show in 2018. And then she, because we live in the modern overconnected age, because the tail of the snake is ripping out the back of its own skull, because it shattered the back of the snake's skull and it's now dangling, the tail is dangling out the back of the snake's head. You know, Roseanne tweets something and gets taken off the show. But they don't just cancel Roseanne. They keep the show Roseanne under a different name without her, which is just like, you know, we already live, everything else in this age is already so absurd. And that's just a great example. Like, oh, you know, Roseanne offended somebody, so let's just take her off the show and keep Roseanne on the air without her. That's just exactly where we are at. But also, it's like there's another new show I saw commercials for. It's like Tim Allen. Tim Allen just cracking like dumb jokes. It's a sitcom with Tim Allen. It's like, that's where we're at. It's like, that's what makes us comfortable. Tim Allen doing a sitcom on TV in 2018. You know, Roseanne doing a sitcom, and then we can't even just cancel Roseanne. It's like we have to just remove her from the show because she's offensive, and we have to just keep the show, though, because God forbid we lose a show. Can't lose a show. So it's like TV's already just, you know, choking on its own tail. And I mean, TV's at a point where it's like swallowed its own tail several times over. It's like the tail's been swallowed, it's poked out the back of its own head, and somehow it's swallowed it again. So it's just like wrapping itself over and over. It's like this tightly wound cable, twisted. It's all twisted up. Twisted TV. You heard of Twisted Tea? That alcohol-infused malt liquor drink? Well, this is Twisted TV. But yeah, I don't see the level of creativity. And like, I mean, I don't need to comment on movies and remakes and just the recycling that goes on there. I don't need to comment on like all that shit, because that's too obvious. Because what I see, though, is what's happening to us as people. And I feel like we as people are being less creative. And maybe it's always been this way. Maybe it has been. But I feel like that rate of change is happening with us as well, where it's, I don't know, where it used to take longer, I feel like, for people to become boring as adults. It used to take longer, and now we're having children later, if at all, we're marrying later, if at all, but we're not staying interesting up to that point, if it even happens. We're just kind of free-falling. We're just kind of hanging in dead air. We're sitting at the edge of the couch. I feel like that really sums up not just me right now, but I feel like that kind of sums up this generation, is we're just kind of sitting on the edge of the couch. Ouroboros has swallowed its own tail, and we're sitting at the edge of a couch. So go buy your Super Mario t-shirt and watch Tim Allen and Roseanne. And just hope, and you know, if you get into like some new niche interest, you know, make sure to look up the blog about how you should dress, because, and you know, go to eBay, go to the boutique online stores that'll help you look perfect. And, you know, let's just hope that something changes that's not catastrophic. Let's hope that something kind of like knocks us askew that isn't a total catastrophe. Because I don't want something bad to happen. I don't want things to be interesting because they're bad. That's for sure. I don't want, you know, even though I find a lot of what's going on to be just kind of disappointing, I don't want things to suddenly become interesting in a horrible, catastrophic way, because catastrophe always has the capacity to make things interesting. And maybe some people feel like we're living under a catastrophe. I mean, you look at late night TV and all that, and just the way that even Bill Maher, who I like, I mean, I find his show very difficult to watch because it's just all about you know who. He can't talk about anything else, and that's true for all late night TV. And that's just another form of what I'm talking about, where it's like, even if this is going on and you feel compelled to talk about it, or you think your audience wants to hear it, we're just in this weird, we're churning, you know, it's like life is just churning. It's It's churning, but it's also, I don't know, just edge. I'll leave it on the edge of a couch. We're living on the edge of a couch, free-falling on the edge of a couch. But it turns out we're sitting on the edge of a couch, and that couch is free-falling like some cartoon.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave, this golden land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me.